The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
And I'll add to that that I think it should be quite a nice day long on Saturday. It's been my wish that here at IMC that at least once a year we do a day long on mindfulness of speaking. It's such a hugely important area of mindfulness in our social life. And it's also probably one of the most difficult areas of being mindful. So to periodically have these kinds of events is, I think, very important. And Oren has been exploring mindful speaking for many, many years. He's been teaching about it. And he's a newly minted teacher at through the Spirit Rock teacher training as of Friday. So we might be getting his one of his first teaching things when he's a full-blown teacher. In being with the killings in Orlando, first thing that comes to mind, first thing that comes to heart is a broken heart. First thing that comes to mind is that the Dharma, there's a teaching that the Dharma is found in your hearts. The Dharma is not found anywhere else. And that one of the ways the Dharma is found is by opening the heart, or Dharma is found in the open heart. And it's possible to open the heart so wide, so large, that it includes the whole world. We find the whole world in our hearts, or we find our hearts encompassing the world. And that movement to opening the heart is a movement to somehow overcome or release the things that close the heart, that constrict it. So fear, hatred, anger, despair, discouragement, all these things that people carry with them that often close things down. And the paradox is the more we open, the more sensitive we are, often the more we then feel the impact of the world, because the world is us. The world's in our heart. And my impression is the more longer I've practiced, the more often my heart breaks. And the more off, because this world is full of heartbreaking circumstances. And I really don't want these kinds of events to happen anymore. You know, whatever we can do to stop these kinds of events, we should. And when they happen, it feels important to be a witness to it, or be open to it, or to really take it in and be present for our shared humanity, so that we can live together in this world in a way of love and care and mutual concern for each other's well-being. So after dinner this evening, I spent the time looking at now these photographs and the names and the stories that there are now published of the victims. And it felt important to take them in and be aware of them and feel them. And it, you know, it hurt to do that, but it also felt there was a rightness to it. I don't know if that's even the right word to say it, but it seemed appropriate, appropriateness, or it felt like, of course, we want to know, of course we want to share. And as I sat there, as I've been thinking about or being with this over the last, now what is it, 2 days? It just seems that what happened in Orlando is a powerful cross-current, powerful meeting point of so many ways in which our society gets torn apart. And here again, it's been torn apart even more. The fabric of our society gets torn by this kind of thing. And so members of our human family, people who, gays, lesbians, bisexuals, transsexuals, queer, gender fluid, there's a whole range of wonderful people who have been persecuted for so long in this country and have lived afraid. I mean, the level of fear that so many people have lived in for over these last century and more, it was just beginning to, you know, over the last decades, to somehow feel safer for some of them. But it's kind of easy to forget how much danger there is and how much animosity there still remains. And so we have this wonderful gay community which once again has had their fabric torn apart. And with them, the rest of us. And then the particular night of the shooting, apparently it was Latino night at the Pulse, at the dance club. And so I guess most of the people there were Latino, Latina. And that's another important family of our society. And important members of our wider human family who also received tremendous prejudice and persecution and problems here in this country. And so the pain of that community here in this country. And this ripples out because it isn't just the people there who suffer, but it does a tremendous, you know, stab in the heart for people who've suffered so much, who are carrying with them the trauma of being persecuted and feeling hostility towards them. And some of people have experienced violence. And, you know, it's hard to kind of free oneself of that. It's kind of the weight of it. And so to have it happen again, not even to you, but to your people or to people you feel close to, or it just kind of opens up the wounds again. And then it goes out from there. You know, all the people who are families and friends and co-workers and neighbors of the people who have been hurt so badly. And then a whole city. I mean, I imagine that Orlando is in shock, to say it mildly. I was teaching a retreat until yesterday morning. So I woke up to the news, and I knew that there was a woman at the retreat from, I thought she was from Orlando. She was just from outside Orlando. And I wondered what it was going to be like for her to go back, and who does she know? And that, you know, kind of showed me the closeness of you know, Orlando's not so far away. There's a woman from Orlando there. So I felt a need before the retreat was over to tell her what happened so that she could somehow be prepared or do what she needed to do. And when I told her, it didn't seem like it had anything to do with her people she knew, but she knew of the place. She knew the dance club called The Pulse. She knew about it, and she started crying. And then this whole event, you know, touches another way in which our society is torn. And certainly with the whole conflict controversy around what to do about guns in this society. Such a divide that this creates for us and kind of separates people so awfully. And then there's, we're in the middle of this election cycle, and touches that, and that creates a lot of fear and divide, and it seems like it adds to levels of animosity and anger and despair in our society. It just goes on and on. And I wonder about the first responders, the people who, the police officers, or who had to somehow try to save lives. They were, I think, must have been amazingly brave to put their lives at risk, to try to do something, to try to meet the situation and best they could. And the ambulances and firefighters who had to show up at the scene and try to care for the people who were wounded and to see all that. It affects people for a lifetime and their family, and goes on and on. So this happens to us, these kinds of events. And it's not easy. And the more open the heart is, in some ways it's harder it becomes. It certainly becomes harder to kind of keep the heart open, to keep our heart inclusive, so we're not willing to succumb to hate or anger or the various forces that increases the divisions again. But how do we live with it? How do we respond? And I think since the Dharma is in our own hearts, for those of us who practice, it's a challenge then. The challenge is to find how to stay open or how to continue to open, and to take that on as a big question. What does it mean to be open? How do we do this? How do I not give in to hate or anger or fear or despair? Or how do I open to my anger and fear and hate? How do I include that? So that doesn't become a divide. I push that away. How do we hold our feelings and emotions and make space for it? And to have a practice that keeps turning towards this. I find it amazing, a small kind of coincidence that Saturday evening, around 5:30 or so, I went for a walk with my friend, Paul Heller, into the park near the retreat center. And there was, I thought I'd show him the Frisbee golf course. He'd never seen one. Kind of, local site in Santa Cruz. And we came across a fight between two Frisbee players, big, strong guys who were really angry for each other for some reason. And they started fighting viciously, throwing each other on the ground. What do we do? I didn't know what to do. So we just walked towards them. We didn't run, but they were only about, 60 feet away. But we walked towards them with not any idea what to do. I thought, well, when we get close enough, we'll know something. But then just before we got there, they somehow got separated and they went their ways. So if the Dharma, if the Buddhism, the mindfulness practice that we practice here, is supposed to have any relevance for our lives, it has to be relevant for this. And to be relevant for what happens like Orlando, there has to be a willingness to sit with it and be with it and open to it and to acknowledge it. And I believe that the Dharma practice, what the Buddha presented to the world, was a response to this very thing. because this is not a new thing in our society. It's been going on for millennia. People do this thing, do horrible things. And this is was designed as a way of meeting this and finding a radical alternative to it. And to have the courage and have the willingness and have the sense of purpose that it's valuable to keep opening the heart and finding a way to somehow hold it all, not to close down, not to despair, not to have hate. I think it's a task of a lifetime. And I have tremendous love or tremendous respect, appreciation, admiration for the people who are dedicated. Let's keep trying, even though it's hard. Let's keep trying to step forward and open and find a way in this difficult world of ours. Let's not close the doors on people. Let's not push people away. Let's try to find a way. Let's try to walk towards the challenge and try to find a way. There was a teacher in Cambodia who was evoked this evening, Mahagosananda, who was one of the very few Cambodian monks who survived the genocide in Cambodia. The reason he survived, he was in studying in Thailand. And Jack Kornfield knew him. They were both with Ajahn Chah, and they kind of knew each other there. And Jack said that at the time, he just seemed like a scholarly monk. But he became one of the Mahatma Gandhi of Cambodia. And Jack Kornfield went back in the 70s to see him and went with him to the Cambodian refugee camps in Thailand, where people have been, the Khmer Rouge was still kind of in the refugee camps too, even in Thailand. And they had said, don't have anything to do with this monk. Don't organize, don't, you know, danger of death. And but he went, and he was his life was threatened too, and he went. And they built a platform in the middle of the refugee camps. And he sat on the platform, and the way Jack tells it, 20,000 people came to sit with him. There's 20,000 people who had fled genocide. Maybe many of their relatives had died. And Mahagosananda started a chant, a Buddhist chant, or a Buddhist reciting a Buddhist verse. And apparently he just recited it over and over again, four-line verse, over and over again. And as he recited this four lines, people started crying. And he continued to recite the verse. And the verse that he recited was, hate is not overcome by hate. Hate is only overcome by love. This is the ancient truth. Hate is not overcome by hate. Hate is only overcome by love. And this is the eternal truth. So I imagine that this is a, those of you who've learned about this, this is a difficult time, a heavy time, challenging time. Some of you might not expect it to come to IMC and have this evoked tonight. Some of you would have been shocked if it didn't come up, if we didn't address it. I had no choice myself. How could I not? And it's right in our face, in my face. And I think it's important to have places like this where people can come and where it's welcomed, where everyone's welcome, but where it's welcomed to come with whatever feelings, whatever feelings, whatever emotions, whatever reactions, whatever responses you have, that can come and be held, and there's a place to kind of open to it and process it and recognize it and do that with the support of community sitting in this practice of mindfulness. because it's hard to do it alone. It's hard to kind of find a place where it's okay to come and open to what's here. So here we are. Two days after the massacre of, I think that now they say 49 people. And some of the people who were wounded, the other 50 or so, some of them apparently the wounds are pretty bad. They're going to be, you know, maimed in some ways for life. And so Mahagosananda evoked love. How can we have love at the same time as allowing whatever we're feeling to be there? And I believe that the practice we have here of mindfulness, kindness, compassion, are ways of allowing whatever is we find in our hearts, how difficult or painful or joyful it might be, to allow it to be transformed into something which is beneficial for our world. So that if we are afraid and feel unsafe, we become people who can give the gift of fearlessness to others so they don't have to be afraid, at least of us. We can give the gift of safety to others to help the world become safe. If we feel hopeless, hopefully we can turn that around and offer some kind of hope to others that there's a way, we can find our way through this world. We can find our way with this stuff. If we feel hate, hopefully that can be transformed into love. So here we are. So maybe for the next little while, if any of you would like to say something about how it is for you, but I would like to suggest that this is not the time to express your opinions. It's not the time to express blame towards anyone, but really to just say simply how it is for you, what sits in your heart in a simple, direct way. And probably somewhat briefly, as many people here. So I see a hand. If you may move this mic out there.
So I feel like it's easy for me to criticize ideologies like Nazi ideology, for example. But I do feel, without fear of retribution in my social circle, but I do feel like I'm not free to criticize ideologies like Islam. And my wife is Muslim and I don't have any hatred. But like objective criticism of ideology. Now, I'm curious, where does how do I approach that from Buddhist perspective when I criticize any ideology, whether it's religious or not? Extreme Islamism happened to be one such ideology.
Great, thank you. So this, what we're doing now is mostly just everyone having a chance to say what's going on. So that's what's going on for you. You have questions and difficult questions about how do we live in a world of different ideologies, religious ideas, and how do we live in harmony? What happens when segments of society insists on tolerance but are intolerant of intolerance, you know, or criticism? And how do we struggle with this when it seems like it's part of the picture? Jim.
Uh, I was also on retreat this past week, and when I found out about it, when I got out, I actually didn't feel anything at all. I just felt kind of numb. And I went about my day today. And actually, it might have been close to the same time, about exactly around dinner, I did the same thing. I wanted to be more than just sort of just words on the internet. So I looked through the pictures. And that was very moving. I was at a restaurant, so I didn't feel free to cry, but I actually felt like it.
Yes. Thank you.
So the breath is soft inside, and I feel swollen, all this part in the body. And I feel my heart full of warmth and gratitude and wanting to stay open. As I was listening, I realized how strange I've been from my family. I didn't remember my niece lives in Orlando. And I want to stay open, to keep welcoming people that are separate from me and that I'm separate from them.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you for the talk. As I was sitting, I was kind of reflecting on how normally on Tuesday nights I go to the queer sangha at East Bay Meditation Center, and how many of the folks there are, obviously it's queer, and a lot of them are people of color. And I was reflecting on just how scared I am to go tomorrow night, because I think it's just going to be so full of sadness and people who can feel every day the reality of, you know, violence and death and all of that. And that's including a lot of those folks we're not raised Buddhists, you know, we're Christians, Jews, Muslims, and to not know how to prepare for kind of how much grief is going to be in the room tomorrow night.
Yeah, I can understand your concern. And it's maybe not my place to say something, especially since this was a time for open forum, but I have a lot of respect for East Bay Meditation Center and the people who are the custodians of it, the caretakers of it. It's, if I was gay or queer or gender diverse or whatever, it's probably one of the places I would choose to go tomorrow. Knowing it would be difficult.
I feel incredible sadness, not hatred, not anger, not disbelief. My heart isn't open. It feels pretty heavy. Just overwhelming sadness.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And sometimes we say that in times like this, that we become sad Buddhas. It's not inappropriate to be sad. So to give it an honored space, the sadness, we say now we've become sad Buddhas. So can you pass it back behind you on your left?
Last night, in the wake of this tragedy, I had already had plans to meet a friend of mine for iftar, the breaking of the fast for Ramadan. And he knew that my brother is gay. and he knew that my brother lived in Florida. And we hadn't seen each other, my friend and I, we hadn't seen each other for several weeks, several months. And his first greeting to me was, "Is your brother safe?" And in the wake of this tragedy and the sadness, I was open to that joy, to be able to feel that mix of joy of, cool, great, here's a loving, warm, kind human being in the wake of this tragedy.
Mm. Yes, thank you.
Thanks. So I guess what sits with me is I've lived in many countries around the world, and there are so many places where this level of tragedy is almost a weekly event. And something that I struggle with is to both be very present in the desperation and the grief here, but also very conscious of how common this is for so many people and how one expands a heart to include all that grief is sometimes something I spend try to sit with often.
Yeah. And then when we have things like this happen anywhere, but in the world, everywhere, a part of the, I think also, it's heavy and sad and all kinds of things happen today. And then sometimes it's hard to remember after a few months or a few years. And there's something about forgetting which doesn't respect what happened. I think sometimes when we take in, the more deep it goes into us, I think the more important it is to allow oneself to be changed by this. If we don't allow ourselves to be changed, then, you know, I don't know if it's respectful of it. And so when we take in the whole world, I hope the tragedies all over really change us for the better. One of the important experiences in my life that in terms of setting the direction of my life to really try to devote my life to bringing Buddhist practice to the world, and eventually brought me here because of that decision, I had its genesis in living at the Tassajara Monastery, which is a very somewhat isolated in the mountains in California. And you don't get much, back then we didn't get much news, we'd always get news late. The newspapers and news magazines would come late. And we didn't have much contact with the world for sometimes months at a time. But somehow this time, I think it was a Time magazine arrived, or was there, I found one, it was maybe several weeks old. And I opened it, and it was full description and photographs of a refugee camp that had been bombed in some places in the world. And it just broke my heart open. And that was a... experiencing that changed me. So that now I wanted to really turn my Buddhist practice around and not just be for me, but be something to support with the world. So to allow ourselves to be changed by these things, each person in their own way. It's easier to process this, easier to hold this, if we're willing to be changed for the better. And that might take a lot of courage. So I apologize for going on and on and on. That didn't really meant, it wasn't a direct comment on your...
I think that
one of the things that kind of occurred to the mind as I was processing tonight was there is no enemy, right? And then I watched the mind go, well, then hatred's the enemy, right? So then I need to hate hatred. And then there was the meeting of that with, well, that doesn't work either, right? And the idea of meeting hatred with love, right? And that there's this softness in me today and around all of this that is, it's like a very quiet softness of wanting to love, right? Wanting to sort of very gently hold what is being placed in my hand.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So wanting to love even when it's so hard, I think counts for a lot. We don't have to be perfect, but the effort to practice with what is, you know, to do our best with it, this goes a long way.
Tonight I saw an interview with a mother who had a text conversation with her son as he died in the restroom at the nightclub. And I thought, how kind of her to be willing to share that with all of us so that we could know something of what happened. And I felt such compassion for her. Mm. And I like what you said about allowing this to change us, because I think that gives it real meaning. And so I want to use it to change and heal the corners of separation and hatred anywhere in my life.
Thank you. So before Sunday morning, I felt, every once in a while I feel compelled to, I feel like I have no choice, but to somehow, when I sit up in the Dharma seat here, is to somehow talk about what's going on in our society that's really big. Because the idea of mindfulness is to be present for what is, and learn how to be present and how to be mindful in an effective way. And so sometimes what happens outside of our own personal lives but in the wider world is so big that we have to sit with that, be with it. So with this Orlando, I felt like, how could we not address it here? But in the days before, I had the same feeling for something else. Another topic that I also didn't know how to talk about. I didn't know how to talk about this today. So it's hard for me just to find my way with it. And that was to talk about rape in our society, sexual assault, because of what happened at Stanford. And that also seems like a really big thing in our society, what just happened there. And it speaks again to how much violence there is and how there's a huge population of people who suffer, sometimes in unseen ways. So, you know, it's as I said earlier, Buddhist practice was designed to meet this. And I believe that this practice of mindfulness and compassion and honesty and is, I have complete faith in it, that it's so effective and powerful that there's no need to despair or feel hopeless. Even though we might feel that way, there's no not necessary to get stuck there. There's a practice that can hold it. There's a practice that can move it. A practice that can transform us. And it might come to the point someday, who knows where how it's going to all evolve in our society and times. We don't know what's going to happen. But maybe someday it will come when it's your turn to go sit on top of a platform with 20,000 traumatized people and be able to sit there and recite from your own heart, because you know it, hate is never overcome by hate. Hate is only overcome by love. This is the ancient teaching. This is the ancient truth. I hope we all can be ready, transform ourselves into someone who can be of support and help to those in need. And if you're the one in need today, I hope very much that coming here was some support, some small support perhaps, and that places like IMC and East Bay Meditation Center can be refuges and supports for those of us in need and need to. But in doing so, it becomes, we're also kind of have this long-term vision that it is not just for this moment, but it's for the future and future generations that we do this work. And who knows what we'll be asked to do in the future. And we'll be ready. When there's a fight in a frisbee field, to walk towards the fight. When, you know, so you've come to a Buddhist center of practice. I hope that this practice supports you. And I hope that all of us in our society as a whole is transformed by this for the better, so that we can live in a society where compassion is a common trait, where the desire to support the safety of all beings is a common phenomenon, where profound respect and love and celebration for every person is a common thing. And for those people in the gay, lesbian, transsexual, gender diverse world, we would like to have a society where who they are is not just welcomed, but celebrated, really honored, and they have a valuable place. We understand that they are a gift to our society, not just to be accepted. So, thank you for coming, and I hope that you take very good care of yourself and take care of the people around you. And I hope that we keep practicing. Thank you.